Meeting open, if that's okay. Declare the meeting open at 9:34. And I'll start by acknowledging the Condamooka people, who are the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet. I would also like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to other Indigenous Australians who may be present this morning. Just a reminder of our public conduct at meetings, Section 32 of Standing Orders. All members of the public present at a meeting must not, without the prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs. I'm just going to pause there for a second because I have had a couple of complaints from members of the public in regards to people taking photos and recording this, and I'm going to just remind people that as chair it's my responsibility to deal with that, and so if I am made aware of that, I will be taking action. Also, members of the public must remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way, not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present, be suitably dressed, turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any phone calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements that I may, with or without such warning, require that person to leave the meeting and not return for such a period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. I haven't been advised of any leave of absence, councillors, so we'll go straight to our devotional segment. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks.
From the cage.
Thank you.
To lead us in a brief devotional segment.
Thank you very much, Hayden.
God bless you guys. Thanks for having me. Oh. I'll do it all again.
Thank you, Pastor.
That's my
Green.
Fault. Sorry.
We heard you.
Yeah.
Councillors, the next item is recognition of achievement, and I haven't been advised of anyone wanting to speak on that particular item. Receipt and confirmation of minutes for the 9th of May 2018. Could I have a second, a mover and seconder, please, that those minutes be confirmed? Move Councillor Gleeson, seconder Councillor Hughes. Any items of correctness? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillors. Matters outstanding from minutes of previous meetings. I don't believe we have anything to report. So we're on to public participation. Now, I did have a couple of people that did apply for public participation today, but I think have either got the wrong date or coming next week. Or we have got one?
Yes.
No, I think Mark isn't going to be here today. I think he wants to be here at the next meeting. I don't think Mark LeGrand's in the public gallery. Do we have any other speakers that would wish to address council this morning? Okay, there being none, we don't need to move into public participation. So we can go straight to petitions and presentations. And I believe Councillor Hughes and Councillor Tolte are presenting from a workshop they attended last Friday. Over to you.
Thank you, Mayor Williams. Good morning, everyone. Councillors, myself and Julie, Councillor Tolte, attended a one-day seminar, Women's Leaders in the Public Sector, held in Brisbane on Friday the 18th of May, hosted by the Public Sector Network. Opening the morning session were keynote speakers Cheryl Varden, Chief Executive and Principal Commissioner, Queensland Family and Child Commission, and Saveria De Marci, Deputy Chief Operating Officer, the University of Queensland. Both women were engaging as they shared several personal stories of challenges across various workplaces as they embarked on different career paths, leading to some positive challenges and advances as they were able to celebrate those milestones in the workplace. It was really interesting to hear. Cheryl emphasised the importance of mentoring and supporting young women as they navigate their own careers, and Saveria highlighted the gains that the university has planned with their childcare policy, currently focusing on the introduction of before and after school care. At a university, I think that would be really an advancement for women in particular, but not just women, families. There's a lot of dads that look after the toddlers as well. This was followed by a lively one-on-one interview with Sharon Kelsey, former CEO of Logan City Council, which included a couple of cheeky questions and answers. Commissioner Katerina Carroll, Queensland Fire and Emergency Services, gave a presentation on the emergency sector, their journey from a male-dominated workplace to the inclusion of women, highlighting some of the typical biases and barriers aspiring female leaders needed to overcome. Katerina was also supported by a very strong and committed address by the Queensland Police Service's Superintendent Virginia Nelson. She's a very strong woman and great speaker. She shared her amazing career and added a positive contribution to Christine Castley, Deputy Director General Housing from the Department of Housing and Public Works. Three very strong and inspiring women that combined to offer a positive and collective message of the value to women pursuing their own career paths and aspiring to leadership roles, not just a job and not just an income. Panel discussions and workshops completed a very busy agenda late into the afternoon with a large audience that gained a fresh perspective of their worth in the workplace. The theme of the day was a valuable reminder for respect and compassion in the workplace, with a focus on the importance of being a mentor and role model for others once in a position of leadership. It was interesting to note that in a room full of women working in leadership roles, that very few felt that they had achieved that elusive work-life balance.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. And that was a very comprehensive wrap-up of the day. And it was. It was a good day. Enjoyed it. We spent the day with a lot of women in senior roles in many different areas of government and heard from some very senior speakers. It was very good to speak with Katerina Carroll and Sharon Kelsey, who I know through my work here at Council, and find out a little bit more about their current lives and roles. There was a lot of time to talk and think about the position of women in leadership roles and senior leadership roles. And I was pretty pleased with our organisation. We've got a pretty good representation of women in senior roles in this organisation. It can always be better, but it was nice to be able to think, well, we do have a good balance. So well done, RCC. Thank you.
Thank you, councillors. With that, we're moving straight on to order of business. Any motion to alter the order of business? There being none, we'll go straight to material personal interest and conflict of interest and just remind you of your responsibilities under the Local Government Act 2009 and other current amendments that have just been implemented, and in relation to any material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed at a meeting. A summary of responsibilities are included in your agenda, and I might just make sure we get that updated for the next meeting so that we are clear on what legislation that we're required to abide by. Moving on to our reports, councillors, item 12.1 is our operational plan quarterly performance report. Councillor Mitchell, would you be happy to move that?
Yeah, happy to move 12.1, the Operational Plan Quarterly Performance Report.
Move Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Very, very briefly. Most of it's in the report and encourage everyone to read it. Just a small amount of preaching from the pulpit on one of my pets, which is on waste. Notice our resource recovery in the city. We have a 64% resource loss. I mean, across the state, I think we do all right. But 49% is actually garden waste and food waste, and just encourage everyone to have a look at their own waste and see if they can reduce that and reuse it somehow. But yeah.
Speaker against? Okay, they haven't yet been answered by officers. Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to refer to item 2.3.1 to Peter Best, our General Manager, thank you, regarding the Judy Holt, the leachate collection design. Could you update us on that, thank you?
Through you, Madam Mayor, to the Council. Thank you. Certainly, Councillor Hughes. The design for the leachate removal has been completed. It's currently being assessed by a quantity surveyor to price that design. Once that has concluded, the next steps are to procure the works, and that will be undertaken in consultation with the procurement group here at Redland City Council, and then initiate the works on a non-interruption basis to the rugby union club. So we're planning to commence the works following procurement after the footy season, if I can put it that simply. Late September, October, officers will be consulting with the Rugby Union Club to keep them informed and also understand their schedule of games leading up to that period.
Thank you very much. I have a lot of interest in that on a weekly basis about the rugby. Thank you. And further, Peter, just one quick point. 5.2.2 regarding our surf life-saving precinct, there was discussion in the last year around November, December, we started with regards to the land swap potential, and I'd like an update on that. My residents, we had flagged McMillan Road, 61 McMillan Road.
I can give you an update on that. It's probably not a Peter Best. Yesterday we actually, we started progressing with that land swap. We've been negotiating with SLSQ as to exactly what is required, and they confirmed their amount of land requirement yesterday or the day before. I'm looking at the back of the room. Yesterday, oh, sorry, Peter, you probably could have answered. I wasn't sure if you're in the loop on that one. So that is progressing. So we're now waiting for the Minister to sign off.
Thank you very much for that. And I'd just like to note on item 1.2.2 and commend Council, we have two koala plantings. And I think that I hope we have planted a male and a female. I think we're innovative and leading in all things koalas, so that now that we're planting them, I'm hoping to see that we have some good results soon. Thank you.
Nice pick up, Councillor Hughes. I think there was one word missing out of that, maybe tree. But okay, very funny.
We're a very okay. innovative council, thank you.
Are there any other questions? If not, I'll hand back to Councillor Mitchell to sum up if required.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Ranger Stacey was in the city recently, and I'll alert her about our methods. Look, this is our operational report card. 60 items are on track, 7 are being monitored, and I think the public can be confident that we're all keeping an eye on it and monitoring it very well.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 12.2, making of an interim local law number 1. Now, there was a slight amendment discussed in regards to just articulating the time frame. So if we could move that motion, I think it's Councillor Elliott with just a small...
First.
Oh, well, we need to move it first, Councillor.
Okay. I don't think we need the amendment.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't need to...
Can I just say something before we move this?
Sure.
The officer sent me the change there, which is the same as the wording that was there, except a different way around. So in the body of the report says we can only have the interim law for 6 months,
correct.
So it's not really needed as an amendment.
Sure, okay.
And the officer also said within that time frame,
it falls away if it once it's
the
adopted.
Government and everybody, we should be on our way, have it in place.
So I'll have you move the officer's recommendation then, Councillor Elliott.
Moved
Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Would you like to speak to it further, Councillor Elliott?
Yes, just a little bit, thanks, ma'am. The interim local law is necessary in this instance. It would enable officers to regulate waste management activities and mitigate public health, safety and amenity risks associated with our waste management activities in the city from the 1st July 2018, enabling council the time to undertake a full local law making process in parallel with a view to introducing a local law for waste management to supersede the interim local law. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Any speakers against, councillors? There being none, I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 12.3, review of asset accounting, waste and parks asset. Councillor Edwards, would you like to move that?
Item 12.3, review of asset accounting policy, waste and park assets. I move the officer's recommendation as written.
Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Just shortly. This report has come about from Council's independent auditors, Bentley's, raising a business opportunity for Council where they recommend the waste and park assets are held in account at cost instead of the current valuation of fair value, which is subject to regular revaluation. Bentley noted the classes of assets have an immaterial value, so the cost incurred in completing valuations exceeded the benefit derived from completing those valuations. The Australian Accounting Standards Board 116 allows entities to select either model, and the non-current asset policies for the Queensland public sector suggests that this cost model is appropriate for these types of assets referred to. There are no additional risks for councils to adopt the cost approach, and in fact there's a small financial saving of approximately $73,000 in internal staff costs. This change also aligns with council's asset accounting policy to reflect this change in valuation approach. In my opinion, it's a sound approach, and I would regard it as a business as usual. I support the recommendation. However, as a personal opinion, I believe that low-impact adjustments such as this to accounting procedures probably should be delegated to the CEO in the future.
Speaker against? Question, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. To our Chief Financial Officer, thank you, Deborah. Just following up on the timeline of this report, it was advised in 16-17, understanding that financial year, and we notified Bentley's just recently, and we're looking to implement that. It just seemed to be a long timeline there. Could you just speak to that? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you, Chair. Thank you for the question, Councillor. Yes, so we have our final audit in September of every year, and the Bentley's team and QAO made this improvement recommendation to us. So you may recall Council adopted its annual report in November of 2017. So we need to wait until that's closed out for that financial year. Then we turn our minds to looking at the next year, and we compile what's called technical position papers, and we refer to that in the report. We have to provide Bentley's with our technical position papers by the 30th of April. So we've put some time and energy into that. We sent over many position papers this year, so this was one of several. And we close that out by 30 April. So I think once we've done our research, once we've checked, done some benchmarking with other councils, made sure it was the right thing for our council, we've put this forward both to Bentley's, the QAO, and we now bring it to yourself. So I acknowledge that's taken some months, but we make sure we do the right research, benchmarking, to come to the right conclusion for our council.
Any other questions? Being no more requirement to sum up, Councillor Edwards? No. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. The QAO Interim Management Report, moved by Councillor Gleeson, seconded by Councillor Borglari. Would you like to speak to it?
Thanks, Mayor. I'd like to move item 12.4, which is the QAO Interim Management Report.
It's been moved and seconded.
Yeah, moved.
Speak to it.
As far as Queensland Audit Office goes, reports don't get much better than this. I note on page 87, last year we had 4 deficiencies that have been resolved and 0 deficiencies this year. So certainly the information trail from Council is fantastic, and I congratulate the finance team on that once again. That's about it. Thank you.
Any speakers against? Any questions? If I could just reiterate our appreciation through you, Deborah, to your team. I know it takes a great deal of work and commitment to get through these reports, and to get the green lights like we have is a great achievement. So on behalf of Council and the community, please pass on our gratitude. Thank you. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Next item is the April 2018 monthly financial reports, moved by Councillor Borglari, seconded by Councillor Golay. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Borglari?
Oh, thank you. I did ask the CFO yesterday if she'd like to say a few words, because I always think it's good for her to give a wrap-up of the monthly. One thing that I picked up in this monthly financial is at present it looks like $10 million from our Capital Works program will be carried over. That can change, of course, between now and the end of the year. Last year we had $13 million carried over. So I really do think coming into our budget deliberations at the moment, we need to be very aware of this and make sure that our Capital Works program, we can go out with great big numbers on budget day and do a great big media release about, you know, big Capital Works programs, but if they're not deliverable and realistic. So I just really think we have to make note. We don't want to have $13 million going over again. At this stage, it's 10. I know the weather this year was horrific, but we really have to be mindful of that moving into the budget deliberations. I just feel it's important. And then I'll just pass over to Deb. There's a lot of good news in this one as well, though.
Would you like to respond to that, Deborah, as well as sum up some of the key items in the report?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through you as Chair, thank you, Councillor Borglari. First, in terms of carryovers, this financial year hasn't concluded yet, so the 17-18 financial year continues through to 30 June. The Executive Leadership Team looks at the financials every month and is very mindful of the progress of the Capital Works Programme. We report on that every month through this set of reports, so we're mindful of the progress to date, and please be reassured that every resource is being applied to deliver what we can in terms of the time frames and what's able to be done. Council will note that each year there is an opportunity for it to decide to carry over works of a capital nature. That decision will come to Council for its consideration post 30 June, so there's still 6 weeks in this financial year to go. With respect to the April monthly report, Council will have noted there's 8 out of 11 key performance indicators met. April's a month where we levy the rates, so we recognise the revenue, but the rates are due for payment in May. So sometimes there's that timing difference between when we can recognise the revenue and when we receive the cash, which explains two out of the three KPIs that are unmet. Cash balances remain strong and the balance sheet remains strong. So more than happy to take any questions or further talk to highlights in the report if needed.
Any other questions or question, Councillor Elliott?
Just like Officer Peter Best, just to confirm on the Capital Works program where that is going.
Madam Mayor, through you. Certainly, Councillor Elliott. With respect to the I&O portion of Capital Works, as of last month, the reported month, our KPI is 85% of program spent. We were gusting 90%. We are gusting 90% as of last month. With that, we also have 14.8 million dollars in commitments going forward, plus work in progress. This afternoon, for the information of councillors, as we do every month, we're reviewing the performance of our projects at group manager level, and such that we can assure ELT as to our position leading up to end of financial year.
More of a comment. Actually, I think the delivery of the capital works this year has been pretty good, and that I think what we probably don't tend to see is what's not there is that there's a lot of works out there have under contract being delivered right there. They just haven't been, we just haven't paid for them. So they are being delivered around the city. So I'd suggest just wait and see. I'm quite pleased the way the capital works program has been tracking. But I've just got a question to ask Deborah. When we're looking at our original budget for the for our operating surplus, we're looking at a significant deficit at the beginning of the financial year, and we've seemed to have improved upon that, and understanding there's still 2 months to go. How do you think we're tracking at this stage towards the end of the year of not hitting that initial deficit position that we're forecasting?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through your chair, thank you, Councillor, for the question. That is the $64 million question. However, based on my experience, I think what Council may be mindful of is the operating deficit as on budget day, $11 million, and my understanding is ELT made a commitment to you as our Council that we would work through the year to find efficiencies, find saving and drive improvements. That's happening across the organisation in my own area as well as those of my peers. If you were to ask me where we'd come at the end of the year, I think it will be an operating deficit, but I don't think it will be the quantum of $11 million. So I'm suggesting a single-digit operating deficit. The reason I'm saying an operating deficit is for a few factors, but in the main because we are delivering those works as you've talked to. So there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to deliver against our commitments, but I don't think we'll crystallise $11 million operating deficit due to the commitment savings. I'm personally running some vacancies to try and claw back some of that money, and then we do the best that we can.
And I think on that, our trend is that we've always come in better than we've forecast. And I think it's also really important to note that our statement of comprehensive income is always very favourable and very much in the black. It's just one of the tools that we use to measure the health of the finances of the organisation, and the SOCI is the one that I'd be recommending that you also refer to when we have these discussions. But well done to the team. I think pretty much every year that I've sat in this chair, we haven't come anywhere near the... We've always been in the positive to where we started, so well done to the team. And that's a great start for our budgeting for the next financial year as well. I just wanted to, and I know it's slightly off topic, but it is for the agenda item, but I just wanted to perhaps ask officers if there's been any further advice from the state government on their decision on the QCA recommendation for bulk water prices. It's certainly topical both in George Street, in Parliament, certainly for us as we are now in the last stages of putting our budget together, to know exactly what we will have to pass on or potentially even continue to offset, which we've done in previous years, the cost of bulk water that's passed through to our residents. So I'm not sure, there's been a letter that I've received from Minister Lynham where I asked about when that decision will be made, and it was pretty much a yes minister response, to put it bluntly. Didn't really tell me it was up to the Deputy Premier to make that decision, so I'm just checking if there's any advice. No further advice. So at the moment, as you know, through our budgeting process, we'll have to accommodate that price being passed on through us to our residents. So we'll continue to keep the pressure on getting that advice. There are two options, an option one and option two. Our position was publicly sent back as an option two. So we need to be able to set our budget, and so do other councils in this position. There's three of us that will be in this position because it forms part of our budgeting processes and our rate notices. Just probably an item for us to keep an eye on. Anything further? Councillor Boglary, would you like to sum up?
No, in summing up, I'd just like to thank Deb and her team, you know, for all the work they do. There's been prioritisation processes and everything brought in, and I think that gives all councillors a greater confidence in all the work going forward and the budget process itself. I think there's been some massive improvements there. So thank you to all the team. And with that, I'll put the motion.
Those in favour, councillors? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 13.2 is decisions made under delegated authority for Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications. Oh, did I miss one? Oh, sorry, my apologies. 13.1, Councillor Boglary, would you like to move it?
Thank you. I'd like to move it with an amendment, please. I've sent through a dot point number 5. I sent that out. It was sent out earlier. It has been sent out earlier. Oh, so people can see it. Yep.
I don't know that we're amending the open space strategy. Are we just amending it or reviewing it?
Undertake a review of the local government infrastructure plan to determine whether amendments are required following any council review and amendment of the open space strategy 2026. So it says following any.
I'll get some advice. My understanding is there's been a gap analysis and a review, but there isn't actually a proposed amendment of the strategy.
Madam,
so the review would
Madam
cover
Mayor,
it.
That's correct. There's a gap analysis. We're doing an analysis so that council can understand how we have progressed through the open space strategy since its inception in 2012. Bearing in mind it's a document, it's a strategy that will last to 2026.
So perhaps we need to just remove the word, just review, the reviews covers all of that, and take out the word amendment because it won't be amended. The review of the open space strategy.
Well, I was trying to word it as in if the gap analysis shows that there does need to be an amendment, that would happen, because it doesn't actually say it has to happen, it just says any. So I was trying to cover that base.
That's not the intent of the gap analysis, Madam Mayor, Councillor.
So with that, I really need to get a seconder if this recommendation is to proceed with some discussion. But I think there would be much more comfort in a couple of words being removed.
Yep.
You happy to do that, Councillor? So just the review of? And I'll seconded Councillor Bishop. Okay, Councillor Boglary. Oh, well, I just need to get it.
Okay.
No, it was moved as an amended motion. Okay. So I'll come to you if that's okay, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Boglary, Speaker 4.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure everyone's read the report, and as it is stated in the report, the Planning Act 2016 requires local government planning schemes to include an LGIP in order for local governments to levy infrastructure charges and condition development for infrastructure. Until the 30th of June, the Council's current Priority Infrastructure Plan, the PIP, can remain current, but as the cut-off date of the 30th of June, without an LGIP attached to our planning scheme, Council will have no mechanism to levy charges. This, of course, makes it totally necessary that a new LGIP is approved by Council, which happened last year. It was sent to the State Government for their approval, and today it is in front of us to adopt to replace the PIP and to be incorporated in our current planning scheme and then the new city plan so council can remain able to levy charges. We need to make this happen. At this stage, as the process for making major changes requires a statutory approval, re-notification and public consultation, which can take 6 months, so this could result in council, this actual transition being held up, and it could result in council being unable to levy the charges, it's not possible to make any changes to the LGIP at this stage. Now, I didn't vote to approve the LGIP being sent to the state government last year, as I have concerns over some aspects. And however, the majority of council did approve it, so the document has been forwarded and we're now at this stage. Over the past year, I have consistently sought clarifications on these concerns and I still believe there needs to be some revision made. Also over this time, some other councillors are now making comment about concerns they now have. It is for this reason I support the LGIP being approved today, because council has to be able to continue to levy charges, but I am seeking support to add this amendment to the motion because at present it is currently proposed to undertake a review of the plan twice yearly. It is important to emphasise that while the document will be reviewed twice yearly, this does not mean it will necessarily make an amendment to the document. Amendments, I have been advised, will be undertaken on a needs basis where warranted by things such as a new planning information, revised council policy direction and legislative requirements. Given that this amendment process requires significant investment of staff resources, it is generally considered appropriate to limit the number of major amendment packages to no more than one a year, and minor amendment packages being undertaken twice yearly immediately following those reviews. However, with the city plan commencement date delayed, council is having time at the moment and is proposing to undertake a series of concurrent but separate major amendment packages following the commencements of the new city plan. So I am seeking, by putting this in, we are having a change that if it is necessary, an amendment to the local government infrastructure plan could also be one of the amendment packages running concurrent with the other ones. Council generally would undertake a review every 2 years and a major review every 5 years, but I feel I don't want to wait another 2 years to have this review done. Given that councillors have concerns and a gap analysis of the open space strategy is happening, and this feeds into the LGIP and is intrinsically linked to the LGIP. It's on those grounds that I am seeking support from councillors today to have this amendment added in there so that we can, with the gap analysis, have a revision of the local government infrastructure plan, but not hold it up because we do need to get it approved and joined with the current city plan.
Speaker against? Comment? Any other, are there any speakers against? There are just comments. I might actually get David Jeans just to just clarify some of those points as well, if you don't mind, David. Sorry, Murray. Councillor Elliott.
Because we're not doing a review of the open space strategy. It's just a simple gap analysis that Officer Best is undertaking through his department to have a look at what's missing. So if you leave it as a review of the open space strategy, that could be 12 months away of council agreed to, which we haven't talked about. And it was a simple gap analysis. So I don't have a problem with the undertaker review of the local government infrastructure plan to determine whether amendments are required, full stop, and in a timely thing. And I stand corrected, but I was told it was 6 monthly, not two yearly. It's not every 2 years, it's twice a year. So I would say it's timely because 2 years we've been fiddling around with the thing, it's been in the state and all this, so it is timely to do it, I agree with that, but certainly don't hinge it on a review of the open space strategy because that's not happening.
I just might get David to respond in response to that, just to be very clear, because it is in our corporate plan, as I understand it, so.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Good morning, councillors. So through the corporate plan, we've committed to a twice yearly review of the planning scheme as a whole. So that's not the local government infrastructure plan itself, but the whole scheme, and those reviews will determine whether any amendments are necessary. The LGIP, the infrastructure plan, is a key element of the planning scheme, and that can be reviewed periodically. Now, we're required to undertake a major amendment every 5 years. So every 5 years, under the Act, we must have a major review. We can update the LGIP at any time if there are changes to policy, if there are changes to network plans. So Council is undertaking a review of the open space strategy.
It's a gap analysis.
If through that process Council determined that changes were required to the LGIP, we could make those changes. We're not saying we have to make them, but it will depend on the outcome of that gap analysis.
So you would only be doing an amendment on the open space strategy stuff, nothing else?
So the LGIP is based upon various network plans, open space, roads, stormwater, water, sewer. If those network plans change, we would look to amend the LGIP accordingly. If there's no change to the network plans, there's no need to amend the LGIP. So if through the gap analysis, Council determines that there is a need for a change, we would, of course, undertake a review.
It's a big job.
So under the Act, we have to undertake a major review every 5 years
of the LGIP.
We're required to do that, but we can review the LGIP at any point if there is a change to one or more of those network plans. So if the open space strategy was amended, for example, we would undertake an amendment just on the open space elements. We wouldn't look at everything else where the network plans haven't changed.
Through you, Chair. Can I say, but if that comes up and we're going to have that meeting soon, if we think that there is a gap,
5th of June, it's ready to go. It's been scheduled in for the 5th of June. Well, I'm hearing it's going to happen regardless.
So what's happening? When's it happening? I'm getting confused on when it's doing it.
So we're having a discussion on the open space gap analysis on the 5th of June.
Yes, I appreciate that. And then from that, if we find a deficiency in that, or Council can force it, I suppose, to say we'd like to review it.
Correct.
Stop.
Okay. Correct.
Thank you.
It's just I
don't
think those words suit what
we're I do have one question, because obviously the LGIP feeds into other documents in our organisation, and I guess there are some items on there because of the length of time between the beginning of that process to now that have actually already potentially even been built. So how do we manage those? How does that get managed through the process as it then feeds into our capital planning, etc.? That's my question.
Well, we do have Giles Tyler here, who really is the expert on
the
detail. But at a high level, the base year for the LGIP is 2016. So that was when we commenced the infrastructure plan going out for 10 years. Now, obviously, some items, given that we're now 2018, would have been delivered. But it doesn't mean that it's not a 10-year infrastructure plan.
Yeah, okay.
It just means that it commenced in 2016.
And then it gets ticked off on the CapEx delivery, and then the next one moves up.
That's
okay.
It.
Cool. I've got a couple of questions. I'll come back to that, I think. I'll let you have your questions asked and answered first. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we need to know, and I'm happy for David to comment on it, but the only reason that we need to have this interim requirement to attach the LGIP to our current 2006 planning scheme is because the state government has taken a fast approaching, I think, 18 months to move our current planning scheme off the planning minister's desk and return it to us.
Shame on Don Ground.
Oh.
So, we've, and I'm well aware that we've written and we've asked, but I don't know why it has needed to take so very long. Over, but if our planning scheme were to come back, we wouldn't be required to do this. So I think that needs to be noted. And as far as the amendment goes, I'm happy to support it with the amendment. I don't think we need the amendment. I'm happy to support it without the amendment. Thank you.
Councillor Hewlett, question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. When I first saw the LGIP, I was a little bit concerned about it, and I spoke to some of the open space officers, and from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, some of the renewals, this LGIP is for completely new equipment in playgrounds. The renewals will still occur regardless. So that eased my mind because I was concerned that certain numbers of my parks weren't going to get new equipment, but the renewals will still carry on, and this is just about all new. And I think that was where some of the frustration and the angst was. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions, councillors? Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, through you, Mayor, David. David, my question is more around resourcing. It sounds like if a gap analysis does come through, that information would come to your department anyway, and those resources would be enacted at some point. So while the resources might be shuffled a little bit sooner or later, but it's not really asking for any further. Is that correct?
No, that's correct, Councillor. So if and this is just hypothetical, if Council resolved to amend the open space strategy, we would, as a matter of course, review the LGIP to ensure there was consistency. We have a team, Giles Tyler's team, the infrastructure planning and charging team. That's business as usual for them. So we would undertake that discrete review of that element of the LGIP to ensure it was in alignment.
Okay. Are we requiring an amendment to the motion that's there? I've heard some...
That amended motion is live.
Yes. Well, I'm just hearing that there are some councillors that would prefer to have a change or amendment to the amended motion. Are we, or do we think the intent is covered? Sorry? The intent is understood? Can I just bring it back to a point then? I'll take a vote on this in a moment, but in my 14 years in here, that every time we get a change to planning legislation, things like MALPI and whatnot, it's always to help fast track it and make it more efficient. It seems it doesn't actually flow through to the government that writes that legislation and has to sign off on it. Numerous questions to the minister and his team over the last 6 months, both formal and informal. The words they keep using is imminent. Probably need to go to my Webster's dictionary to understand what time frame sits around imminent. But certainly I'm getting increasing questions to my office about where it's at, and clearly we want to move on those changes as a council, and also be able to proceed with things such as the LGIP, which is our only opportunity to capture some of the infrastructure charges for our community to fund the infrastructure required for the development proposed. So a strong message from us that, you know, if we're going to have legislation that takes this much time, that a city plan's almost outdated before a minister can sign off on it, I ask who should be responsible for planning legislation. Maybe there's too many steps in the process, I don't know. But I just, a strong message that we have been waiting, into the community that keeps asking about it. We're still waiting and we're told it's imminent. So with that, hand back to you, Councillor Boglari, and we'll probably just take the vote if you like. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Now, item 13.2. Councillor Tolte, are you going to move the decisions made under delegated authority? Thank you, David. Thank you, Giles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I call councillors' attention to item 13.2, decisions made under delegated authority for Category 1, 2 and 3 development applications, and ask that these be noted.
Moved, Councillor Tolte. Seconded, Councillor Mitchell. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Tolte?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. It's in the report.
Any questions, councillors? No questions. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 13.3, development and planning related appeals list. Move, Councillor Hughes. Seconded, Councillor Hewlett. Would
Thank
you like
you,
to
Mayor.
Speak to it, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move 13.3, development and planning related appeals, listing as at the 8th of May 2018. We can see the listed reports. I'd just like to mention and note that we've had added this fortnight's meeting, point 9. I won't talk to the point except to say that all councillors, I believe, are quite concerned about the rooming accommodation situation, and we are ongoing with this. Most.
Okay, councillors, it's just an item for noting. Any speakers against? There being none, I put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 14.1. Councillor Edwards, you'd like to move that with an amendment?
Yes, item 14.1, petition, recreational boat ramp, Rocky Point, Russell Island. I'd like to move the recommendation with an amendment to point 3, which I circulated earlier.
So moved. Councillors, seconder for that? Yeah, question.
Does that include maintenance for you? It's fully funded recreational boating ramp, but is that the whole deal? The surrounds, the maintenance? I just want to be clear. I support it, but I just want to make clear.
Well, we've actually referred it back to the state as the responsible body for funding of marine infrastructure, recreational.
Well, that says to me, yes, they'll... If they fund it, but who's going to maintain? Are they going to maintain it? All I'm saying is fully funded, established marine maintenance. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to cover all bases. Yeah.
To fully fund and maintain. Are you happy with that?
Happy to include that. Yes.
Sorry.
That's the position we're taking.
To fully fund and maintain. Yeah, I'll just get the words right first. Are we happy with that, councillors? Okay, so I'll need a seconder for that. Ramp. Well, I think this is a petition on one ramp, isn't it?
On one ramp, this one, yes.
So, well, we're responding to a petition here, so
ramp
we need to be...
Singular.
It's one ramp. And any additional ramps at locations in Redlands. Okay, all right.
Isn't that to be fully funded for state?
To fully funded. This is the TO for fully. For state, two.
Two.
Thanks, Chris. Are you happy with that, Councillor Edwards?
Yes, I am.
Okay, now I'll need a seconder so we can debate that. Seconder, Councillor Tolte. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Yes, thanks. I was presented a petition signed predominantly by residents of Russell Island, which I presented at Council General Meeting on the 23rd of August 2017. The petition requested that Council and State formalise a boat launch site at Rocky Point, Russell Island. For some background, Russell Island is predominantly developed at the northern end, where the barge and ferry transport hub is located. The southern end of the island has significant forested areas, but also has substantial clustered housing communities surrounded by this bushland. Bushfires over recent years has highlighted a higher level of vulnerability for residents in the southern areas of Russell Island. A fire review report in 2017 made 56 recommendations to improve safety across all Simbi Islands and identified the need for an alternate evacuation route on Russell Island. The preferred option is to provide an alternate route through the formalisation of fire trails to create an avenue from south to north. Council is currently working towards the linking of existing trails to achieve this. The report did not discuss the creation of a boat ramp for evacuation purposes. Nevertheless, there is a strong feeling amongst many island residents that an evacuation route via boats and barges using a purpose-built boat ramp at Rocky Point would be a better and safer option than travelling via linked fire trails. whilst not in this report nor conveyed in the petition, I believe the concern arises of the practicality of using a linked fire trail for evacuation, particularly for the infirmed, those without transport, and the lack of knowledge of which trail to use and the risk of using trails that may expose people to greater dangers. The Rocky Point area is a well-known landmark and currently used for boating and fishing and can be accessed via two roads, the established sealed Stradbroke Drive and also the dirt track of Glendale Road, which is lined by the power supply poles from the mainland. The petition called for a boat ramp, and the report, and this report has based the need for a ramp here on recreational fishing use. As such, it clearly does not meet that need, as there are other existing boat ramps on Russell Island. The two boat ramps referred to in the report are significantly north of Rocky Point and could not be relied upon for evacuation from the southern end. Rocky Point does have constraints that would need to be taken into consideration for any future ramp. The main problem is that the tidal area is extremely flat, and in order to achieve an all-tide ramp, a causeway of over 200 metres would need to be constructed at a considerable cost. I understand the residents' concerns, and I support a ramp at this location, provided it is fit for purpose. However, it's also important to understand that marine infrastructure, which is on state-controlled land and waterways, is a state responsibility. Council has a number of higher priority marine infrastructure projects already identified, and we continue to negotiate with the state that they fund the waterside costs. The State Transport Minister has advised the principal petitioner that the state government is planning to undertake hydrographic surveys to provide base information to consider the construction of a possible new boat ramp at Russell Island in the coming years. This is a welcome development and acknowledges the state's role in funding marine infrastructure, which in this case should include vehicular access and parking landside. Whilst this announcement by the Minister is outside Council's 10-year capital works program, I don't believe that this Council will object to any marine infrastructure fully funded by the state that benefits the community. Our recommendation recognises and supports the state funding for this infrastructure and also calls for the state to urgently complete their hydrographic investigations and provide those results to both Council and the principal petitioner. The alteration of point 3 ensures councillors are kept abreast of the state's findings and advocates for state funding and delivery of boat ramps. I recommend councillors support this resolution.
Any speakers against, councillors? Question, Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Might I also be advised how many boat ramps are currently on Russell Island?
Rod Powell is Rod, in the back of the...
Would you be able to respond to that question? How many boat ramps on Russell?
Thank you.
Any other questions, councillors? There's no further comments, so I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Sorry? Oh, comment?
Sorry, I'd like clarification perhaps through Councillor Edwards or an officer. The reports we're getting are saying that this isn't needed.
Not for the fire review?
Yeah. So it's really just for the recreational fishing people down there?
No.
I'm trying to work out why are we going to, if the hydrographical investigation comes back that a boat ramp can go in there, we're going to advocate for it at the state's expense, I understand that, but are we advocating for infrastructure that's not really required? That's my concern. And with the cost of and wanting the state to do so many other things, where would this be on that sort of priority list? I'm trying to get what the actual need analysis is, because I can't see it in here or that fishing one that recently came out.
I think all councillors probably received an email from the MBCIA organisation this morning, which are the petitioners for this, for the principal petitioners for the petition. It would appear that when they drafted the petition, it probably looked as though they were seeking a recreational fishing range, which was not the intent of their petition. In fact, the intent of their petition was the fact that they feel a vulnerability for the residents on the southern end of that island, and that the proposal of a linked fire trail, as proposed in the report, was not adequate for their safety, and particularly when you have people who are infirmed or can't drive or have other difficulties with mobility, of where to go in case there is a fire. They feel that the fire trail that was proposed for a south-north evacuation route was not a total solution. I believe that might have been referred to in the report. So their main concern is having a water-based evacuation point, and that is the purpose of this. The minister has come back and agreed to do some hydrographical investigations at this point and also at Sandy Beach, which is on the southern end as well. And whilst the minister has taken up on behalf of the state to investigate those, if they come back with favourable findings, I don't believe that council would want to get in the way of the state funding any marine-based infrastructure they're prepared for, whether at Russell Island or anywhere else in the Redlands.
So it's really to give the residents more than just recreational, it's really to give them a certainty of, because of the fire concerns they still have.
The review didn't recommend that, though. So I just wanted to make that very clear. That might give them peace of mind, but the review didn't actually recommend that, despite what might be said out there. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think those are very important points. The report doesn't recommend the construction of a boat ramp, but there's a very strong feeling of vulnerability on the island. And as is the case with all small communities, you know, the word of mouth and the rumour mill is very strong, and there is a growing fear, which I think needs to be kept in check or managed. And the way that we can do that is by ensuring that the facts are put out to people and provide them a sense that we are addressing these fire concerns. I know this area very well. We had a family home not 100 metres from this boat ramp for many years. And I don't believe that a recommendation would come back to build a boat ramp there. That said, if the tide happens to be in, it's a place where they could do an evacuation. If in a genuine emergency situation, you wouldn't be removing cars, you'd be removing people, and the geography of the area would allow with high tides to use either of those areas for an evacuation point if you really had to. I think the best thing that we can do to help the residents with this concern and other concerns is to go ahead and look at these, get the facts out, and also ensure that the other programs that we're currently running, the burn-off program, is not only being pursued, but being seen to be pursued. When those people see that the fuel reduction load is being reduced by proper and dedicated action, and they can start to see that they can find their way to one of these other evacuation points, that then the fear will be quelled. So fully support this and all of those other actions that we're taking on Russell and the other islands.
Any further comments? Would you like to sum up, Councillor Edwards? Okay. I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Item 14.2. The Station Master's Cottage, moved Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Boglari. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Mitchell?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Station Master's Cottage, as well known, is now in council hands and has been moved down to a linear park. This report is really to bring it into assurance of community use and the future tenants, and exact use has not yet been determined. It's just to ensure that the Station Master Cottage is used for community uses.
Against?
Thank you. On or page 2 of that report, or page 149, it's got following the renovation an award of building compliance and occupancy certificate, which council has to now do to make sure it is quite safe for any group. An expression of interest process will be run by council, inviting local community groups to submit proposals to use the building. Words got out that the building has been moved. I don't think one councillor in this room hasn't been inundated with emails from a variety of groups wanting to use this house. I just want to make sure everyone is really clear. No one has been given promises that they're getting it. It hasn't been awarded to anyone. We can't do anything until all that renovation work has been done. It's fully compliant, and then we'll do the normal council process of expression of interest. I just think that has to be made clear to the community that that will all be happening, and we'll make sure everyone knows about it.
Any speakers, councillors? Comments, Councillor Tolte?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, look, I fully support it. I'm really pleased with the way that area down there is developing, and I think we should be fairly proud of what's being developed there. We've got a lovely little precinct. The buildings there, and when you consider them in conjunction with the courthouse and the historic area that they sit in, I think we've got a really nice attractor, and it's a point of pride for the city.
Any other comments, Councillor Bishop?
Yeah, just acknowledging that the salvation of this piece of European infrastructure is something that's ticking people's boxes, and they seem to like it, which is important, and it's important that Council provides community infrastructure. I think one of the items that does get addressed in this is that once a piece of infrastructure like this does get moved, the heritage significance does change significantly, in fact is eradicated, and where there are other places that are of significance, that maybe heritage is something that does make people feel good and it's worthwhile. And I look at the budgets associated with this, and I just acknowledge that the collaboration that's brought about its salvation could well go to save some of those costs for the city, and as it continues to be a benefit to the city. So heritage is a very important thing to our community, so I totally support it, but this is feel-good heritage, and we can resource the real thing as well, which we are yet to really do with a strategy and so forth. But I just acknowledge that this is important, and it's good that it's important to people. Thanks.
Any other comments? I think it's just a comment from me, if I may. The irony of this is it's actually closer to its original location than when it started, where we took it from. So that's one point of interest. And I do appreciate it. It might be a feel-good heritage opportunity. It does come at a cost to the ratepayers. And I think that'll be fair when we start to talk about budgets of the future, and not only just facilitating the capital investment that requires us as a community in piece of infrastructure to bring it up to DDA compliance. It's not like your own home. We have to go above and beyond that, and we trust that we'll get understanding from the community who likes to see these sorts of projects happening when we have to actually fund that. So it's a really important point. Whatever piece of heritage we're talking about, it does come at a cost to council and to the ratepayer. So with that, I'll hand back to Councillor Mitchell to sum up if he wishes.
Yes, but I might actually get some clarification from officers. There was a group thought the comments. The costs up front and ongoing are quite significant to all our community assets, and what I'd like to know is the expression of interest process in the future. My understanding is it's certainly not going to preclude any of the least resourced and smaller groups in our areas actually applying and using that, but also would leave it open to not-for-profit groups that may be more mature and more significant in size, with as long as they've got a great community benefit, that may be able to lease that property and thus return some finances to council, which in turn goes into the ongoing maintenance and sustainability of these properties. So community use can actually be at that end where we get a financial return that in the end makes it more sustainable. Am I correct in?
I think when it comes to community organisations, generally they they look for us to assist them, but I think that's probably a discussion we have through the EOI process, not right now. This is really about establishing the use. That use does establish the cost to us to get that building into a state of, I guess, compliance for that type of use. That cost will be borne by us in the first instance, and if we find a wealthy community organisation willing to contribute, that will be great for Redland City, great for the community organisation, and great for our budget. So I think we'll leave it at that, and I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Item 14.3, move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Elliott. Would you like to speak to it, Councillor Edwards?
Yes, I'm moving the officer's recommendation. This report is specific to the funding of ferry terminals on the southern Moreton Bay Islands. However, it represents a position of council that all future marine infrastructure, wherever located in the state-controlled lands and waters in Moreton Bay, are the funding responsibility of the state government and their agencies. All infrastructures, no matter how well maintained, have a limited operational life. Marine infrastructure, which is exposed to submersion, tides and harsh environments, has a high cost to construct, maintain and replace. The island's ferry terminals were constructed by the state government approximately 20 years ago and transferred to council for maintenance. The maintenance cost is very substantial and is in addition to the council funded and constructed landside assets such as roads and car parks. Maintenance, no matter how good, only gets so much life out of an asset, and the island's jetties have reached their end of life stage. In my opinion, the Russell Island jetty is close to being on life support. In a strange arrangement, Translink provided council with $250,000 to undertake preliminary planning and a business case for the jetty's replacement. The final agreed business case is to be presented to the Translink board in July. As the divisional councillor, I understand the critical importance of replacing the jetties with a design that caters for the burgeoning island's population, ability to simultaneously receive multiple ferries, including the ambulance boat, provide absolute weather-protected areas, have adequate seating considering the median age of our residents, and hopefully provide terminal toilet facilities for the two larger islands. As the state government has mandated that marine transport is the only option for the islands, the jetties must be capable of efficiently catering for a doubling of the present 1.3 million passenger transfers per annum. The estimated capital cost to replace the jetties is over $26 million and may rise. Excluding Brisbane, there are seven ferry routes in council areas in Queensland. None of the other council areas have any responsibility for ferry terminal infrastructure on regulated Translink routes. The state government, to control the waterways and foreshores, must be the funder of this infrastructure. Council will continue to provide and upgrade the landside infrastructure, as is evidenced by the multi-million dollar car park upgrade currently under construction at Macleay Island. It is self-evident that to be able to provide the appropriate level of infrastructure for the islands, the state via Translink should completely fund the island's jetties. Translink have already demonstrated this principle in their full funding and construction of the ferry terminal at Wynong Creek. Whilst I have concerns around that design, it is Translink's facility, and island ferry terminals are just another Translink extension, as is a train station or busway. It is their asset and responsibility. Acknowledging the Wynong Creek terminal, which has been fully funded by Translink, a far greater financial commitment will come from Council to redevelop the Wynong Creek area to ensure it is functional and an efficient transport hub. It's a partnership where the state funds the waterborne infrastructure and Council attends to the landside infrastructure. For the island's community, I'd like to emphasise that this arrangement for the state to fully fund the jetties is extremely important in order to deliver the standard of jetties that are needed. Council cannot fund the wide variety of island infrastructure being delivered, seal roads, redevelop Wynong Creek and many other structural improvements, plus pay for the jetties, which is a state responsibility. I call on Translink to accept their financial obligation for these marine transport stops, as they do for bus terminals and train stations, and ensure that the new jetties are fit for purpose for the growing islands community. I support the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Any speakers against? A couple of comments. Councillor Tolte.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, fully support this and support getting significant upgrades to the facilities for the islanders. Council has, and it's a function of council, that council has always stepped into the breach where the state government has not been as dedicated as they would like to services in the area. We've seen this historically with after-school care and childcare and immunisations and even internet provision. When that was a new service that came into Redland, it was provided by council. And I'm quite sure that councillors 20 years ago stepped into the breach and took on the responsibility for these jetties because they needed to support the island communities. But those communities have now grown, and so has the extent and reach of the state government's transport services. So the time is right for that responsibility to be taken back on by the state, as should have been the case all along. So, yeah, very much support this. Thank you.
Councillor Elliott.
Yeah, fully supported. I think we've talked about cost shifting over the years, but this is, I think, a red letter day. This is bringing home the bacon, as they used to say. To push back on the state and say, you've got to fund this. This is only one instance in the funding we do. There are other things like mosquitoes. We spend $700,000 or $800,000 a year of it. We have a quarter of it. That's something I want to see pushed back too. There's lots of things. We recently asked to have a look at all the things we do fund for the state, and I think very timely this has come along, and I think watch this space.
Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think it's important that if we're going to get the state to fund these ferry terminals and free up some capital funds for us, that we really start seriously looking at our land-based boat ramp facilities on the mainland. Cleveland Point and Victoria Point are congested regularly, boats parking miles away, parking on footpaths. Macleay Island's getting an $8.2 million car park, and that's fantastic. But nothing, there's no upgrades in the system that I know of to expand Cleveland or Victoria Point boat car parks. I know Peter has Councillor Mitchell has the same issues I do. When it's a stray day or a long weekend or whatever, you know, there's boats parked all down our main avenue. So, the islands are growing, but the mainland's growing as well, and we really need to look at upgrading our mainland-based marine infrastructure
just,
as well.
So, Councillor, I just need you to stick to the agenda item in front of us. Councillor Boglari?
I was just going to say I fully support this as well. It's been 19 years. I think it says here 1999 since the Redland City Council got given this, and it's got to the point now with the island population, and Councillor Edwards is a very strong advocate for the islands, and he knows better than anyone what needs to be done down there, and it is a state responsibility, and doesn't matter what political party is in there for that length of time, Council has been wearing this load. So I fully support this, and I'm just cautious, though. What happens in the meantime, though?
Well, my understanding is that council will still be required to maintain those facilities until that title changes in the instances of some of those other facilities.
Correct, Madam Mayor. The residents will not be isolated. No. Council will honour the current arrangements, and we requested budget for that, operational budget, next year. The business... All will become evident once the business case has been assessed by TransLink on behalf of the state in July.
I just wanted to support Councillor Edwards and Council's position on this, but I also wanted to reassure the residents we weren't going to lead them on, as Councillor Edwards said, life support jetties. You know, there will be maintenance and safety for them, and hopefully, going forward together on this, we're going to get the facilities required.
We're definitely not walking away from the residents. We're walking with them to get the adequate funding that they deserve and Redland City deserves, being a coastal city with a distinct population of island residents across the board.
I was just knowing the way sometimes things are read into different things.
We're
I
not,
want to make
we're
that
definitely
clear.
Not walking away. We're walking with them to get their deserved investment. Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Through, I absolutely agree and endorse the view that we're working with, and I think part of the partnership is working with the state government. It is good to see that that TransLink relationship is formalised, is embedded, is greatly appreciated, and I think it's a natural extension for them to step forward. Council for many, many years has done very heavy lifting on the islands, and as more residents use there, as tourism continues there, I think it's increasingly important that the state government does work with council and with our residents to ensure that that is managed in perpetuity, and it is a significant cost that taxes pay for, and taxes should be appropriated to. Rates shouldn't just have to pay for that. It is a state issue and a state responsibility, so absolutely support that view.
Any other comments? Just might quickly add to that. I think the most important message that I've already said is that we support the residents in getting the adequate infrastructure. We support residents across the city, in fact. We also want to make sure that we get our fair share of state and federal government revenue. As you know, we don't actually get a mini budget down here in Redlands, so often some of those costs like Mozzie, you know, Mozzie's $800,000 goes pretty much unnoticed, but that is funded by ratepayers rather than the state. And so the other important point is that we are all recognising that, you know, Redlands has a coastline of up to 378 kilometres, I think, around that amount, which is a liability and an opportunity. And the liability really comes to making sure you can maintain that. Maintaining foreshores and the coastal edge actually has extra responsibilities when it comes to permits and things like that. So it is an expensive exercise. It makes our city a great place to live. But at the same time, you know, the state and the federal government need to contribute to that. I think the big point for me and you know, something that I wasn't aware of until recent times is the fact that we are the only council of our size, excluding Brisbane City Council, that is required to fund marine public transport infrastructure. And considering the size of our city, I think it's a big burden on us and a big expectation on us to continue to do that. So, you know, despite the call for places like Toondah Harbour to be recognised as a port, which, you know, has never happened, despite the number of people that travel through there on an annual basis, and similarly the people that travel through Wynnum Creek, none of those areas have been acknowledged as a port. The other places in Queensland that require public transport marine infrastructure are either funded by a port authority, by Department of Transport Main Roads, a state government, or by a private enterprise. So we are the anomaly. And, you know, as we've been asking for a better fair share of state budget and federal budget, these are the sorts of things I think we need to highlight. And Councillor Elliott has asked for all those other elements that we're kicking into to help the state with their budgeting. At the same time, we're trying to manage our budget and make sure that our residents, their cost of living isn't impacted unnecessarily so. So I think important note, finish on where I started, is that we're not walking away. We will maintain and keep our community safe as required until such a time as that it's formally acknowledged by the state that it is their responsibility and they will take over the maintenance. The other important point is that the negotiations in the past, and we've seen that at Coochee, I think, and a couple of other places where they ask us to contribute some money and they contribute some money and then they go, thank you very much, here's the asset, which we then have to depreciate and we have to maintain. And let me tell you, depreciation for this organisation is a lot, and it impacts how we budget and set our rates. So we don't need more assets than we already have, frankly. So, but at the same time, we bear that responsibility of making sure we work with our community to give them that access and keep them safe until such a time as the state actually acknowledges that transfer. Back to you, Councillor Edwards, if there's no other comment.
I'd just like to sum up. I really plead with the community, to back us on this and don't bag us. The reason is that we simply don't have the funds to fund this type of infrastructure to deliver the type of terminals they would desire. If the state government walks away from that, there's no way we can afford to build the type of infrastructure needed. So I ask the community, get behind us. We need to draw the line in the sand. We don't make all the approvals for things that go on the water. It's the state. We don't have controls over the foreshores. We need to get approvals from the state. The state collects the taxes. They're doing an infrastructure budget now to go out to the state, which is in the billions and billions of dollars. And we're just calling for a fair portion of that instead of being overlooked like we continually do, where the larger councils in southeast Queensland get the majority of the funding. So I just call on the community, don't bag us, bag us.
Thank you, Councillor. Just before I take that vote, don't bag us, back us, that's going to be the tagline. Can I just also, there was one point that I neglected to mention, is that until 6 years ago, this wasn't part of the TransLink network. So things have changed. 1999, there wasn't half the people living on those islands, nor was there the people in the city. So things have changed, and TransLink now has a business case because they actually collect funds and fares from our residents. Our residents have also been contributing to that for 6 years. So I think that needs to be acknowledged in the state's contributions. So I'll finish with Councillor Edwards' wise words. Don't bag us, back us, and I'll put the motion. Those in favour? Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. Okay, there is no Merrill Minute, nor is there a notice of motion to repeal or amend. No notices of motion. I note that there has been an urgent notice of motion sent around. My view is that it's not urgent. It could come to the next meeting if necessary, and that will give councillors the time to actually get all the information. So there is that urgent notice which doesn't meet the six points. As chair, I'm going through the list, and I'll ask councillor to tell me if they believe it's something that couldn't be put on the next agenda. And it probably also flies in the face of a current resolution that's on the books. So I'd rather have the time to have a look at that, councillors. Councillors, can I just suggest, we've been very good in this space of urgent business without notice. To the respect for the other colleagues in the room, these things need to be brought to our attention before we're sitting in a general meeting. No, because I don't believe it's urgent, but you could put it on the next agenda, Councillor. If you open this up, this will be happening every week.
Madam Mayor, I would like to speak to the urgency, if I may.
Well, you've actually articulated that in the email that you've sent around to councillors.
I have, and given so, that this is something that's come across councillors.
I actually don't believe there is a current motion on the books, and you may just be required to amend that motion. So that's what I'm saying. We need time to actually be able to identify if this is the process is correct.
Yes, and here we are in public.
It's not being about being in public forum. It's about actually making sure you get the right outcome through the motion process.
My request is through this urgent business without notice, for reasons that I would like to at least.
It's been articulated in your email, Councillor, and councillors are reading that right now.
I'll allow them to read it, and then I'd like the right to speak to it.
Councillor, that's not how the standing orders actually operate. Councillors, we have a process that we've agreed to, and if you want to open up the door for this, we'll be spending our general meetings having urgent business without the information and putting officers' resources to the test. Councillors, do you agree that it's urgent, or could it wait till the next agenda?
I've got a couple of questions, but I can't, until it's approved, I can't ask the question.
We're actually just debating the urgency, councillors, because this motion could come to another agenda. And you could have all those questions asked, and you could ask those questions in the meantime. We're debating nothing but the urgency, which is what our standing order requires.
Mm-hmm.
And on the, I think it was the 9th of May 2018, there is a current resolution to deal with this. It may just require an amendment to that resolution or an addition to that resolution.
So are we putting the motion?
I'm not putting the motion. I'm just making sure everyone understands.
Is this that we're going to vote on?
We will be voting on that, councillors. So I just, councillors have been given the reasons for urgency on the email that's been sent to them.
Mayor, it's the does the CEO not already have delegation for that? Didn't we? Wasn't that in the motion that we'd previously done?
Council does, not the CEO. So we do. So, councillors, are you happy for it to be put onto the next agenda?
No, that's not. The point is it urgent?
We can
discuss that later.
Okay, well, I'm just establishing that one point that is the criteria. Does it have to be dealt with at this general meeting? That is the first question.
Are there more points for that?
Down the bottom.
Do I have the right to speak to the urgency?
Is there anything else to add to the email?
I'm happy for you to articulate the email, Councillor.
So reasons for urgency, dot point one, to achieve an outcome, does this matter have to be dealt with at a general meeting of council? Yes, it requires whole of council approval. Does this matter require a decision that only council can make? Yes, council is the only entity that can make that decision. Can the matter wait to be placed on the agenda for the next council meeting? I'm suggesting that the matter cannot wait because discussions as with regards to meetings with the Assistant Treasurer, Michael Suka, after the proposed budget decision to divest, well, to develop 400 houses on the site at Birkdale Commonwealth Lands, that discussions are progressing to actually come to a speedy resolution. And so my suggestion is that there is haste, particularly to address community consternation, and so that is a matter that is in the public interest, that does need to be raised at this meeting, and subsequent to that announcement from the federal government last fortnight and 15 days ago, we have also had a change.org petition that has clearly expressed the community's views, and we've also had a public meeting that I invited all councillors to attend. At the last, I didn't deny. I never denied Don Brown attending at all. Don Brown did attend, and it was a co-convened meeting, just like Andrew Lamming's co-convened meeting. Can I just clarify what you mean by that, Madam Mayor? I'm letting you know that there was a meeting on Sunday on the 20th of May, at which a majority, an overwhelming majority of residents expressed their stated desire for heritage and environmental matters of significance to be addressed, and I have no certainty that
You are now having the opportunity to explain the urgency.
Okay, and so the community has expressed very clearly their desire for these matters to be in public sight in terms of the decision and discussion regarding this particular piece of land as events are moving quickly. I understand, but I don't know, which is why I'm raising the motion. Can the matter be dealt with administratively? No, officers cannot make this decision. This is a decision for councillors. And if the matter relates to a request for information, has the request been made to the CEO or general manager previously? No, this does not relate to a request for information. This is a matter that only councillors can make in terms of the delegation of the decision maker. So that's my grounds, if we're able to debate that. Or,
well, I'll just clarify a couple of things. Firstly, there is a mayoral minute on the books that actually does bring this item back to us. It basically requests that we write to the Federal Minister, Member for Bowman and Chair of Agency of ACMA to request the Australian Government immediately rescind their decision. As you know, the Assistant Minister has already made commitments for us to have the first opportunity to bid for this land. The haste is not there because I've just penned a letter to the Assistant Minister, to the Treasurer, in regards to a meeting when we're in Canberra in about 2 weeks' time, and Councillor Golay and Councillor Hughes will be in Canberra with me. So the Minister has also said that they are happy not to sell the land. So there is not the element of urgency. I'm more than happy for you to come back and amend the current motion. The other point that I'd like to make is what you're actually asking for here is considerable budget to do the studies, and I'd like the officers to come back and explain how we're going to fund that in the current framework of our proposed budget.
Not correct, so actually, and that's debating the motion rather than the urgency.
No, but you're talking about the urgency of this.
Absolutely.
I'm saying the urgency is actually overridden by the fact that...
I'm now hearing for the first time information.
Councillor, I'm chairing the
going.
Meeting and I'm giving you my response, and I ask you to actually abide by standing orders like every other councillor does. Thank you. There is a requirement for us to understand the cost implications, and that can't be done on the floor of this council today. It could be done in between now and a notice of motion on the next agenda. That is simply it. Now, if you want to open up this sort of opportunity for every council general meeting, councillors, by all means, there is no haste to this. And that's been... Well, 2 weeks is not going to make a difference to the discussions and the communications, and currently this decision will come back to council one way or another. That's where the delegation currently sits. So the only in your email you refer to other entities. This has to come back to council anyway. So councillors, I'm going to take a vote on the urgency of this. I'm happy for it to be put on an agenda for a future meeting. I just don't want this to be how we process our notice of motion.
Check. You've suggested some things that are not necessarily to do with urgent business. You've actually addressed the item.
No, I'm actually talking about the urgency, because for councils to make a good decision on this today, they need that information.
They can't debate the issue
or understand urgency without knowing the implications of making a decision on the floor.
And we can discuss that when we decide whether we
decide. I'm just about to take the vote on the urgency, please. Sorry?
Oh, I was just asking for clarity at the moment. The urgent business checklist, aren't we supposed to be just ticking and flicking that one at the moment?
Precisely. But yeah. I'll allow the councillor to explain his urgency so you can make your own minds up, councillor. So.
Because according to that, I'm quite happy for this to go ahead as a...
Well, I've just explained, councillors, that... Well, if you want to make financial decisions on the run... I'm going to make sure
I think, are we debating the checklist?
Well, the urgency actually implicates council resources.
No. We debate the checklist if it's urgent.
I'm happy to take the vote on the urgency. Councillors, do you believe this is an urgent item of business? Well, moved and seconded by Councillor... I need a mover and seconder to determine this is urgent business. Moved Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Boglari. Councillors, would you like to see this move forward as urgent business? Those in favour? Those against? Motion is lost. Thank you, councillors. Those for? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Bishop, Councillor Golay. Those against? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams. Thank you, councillors. Moving into our confidential items, councillors. Sorry? Yes? Well, can we go into confidential and just look at these items? And if you wish to discuss that in public session, we can open it up. Because there are other items on there. Well, I'm just wanting to make sure that there are elements of development agreements and RFPs that are part of this process, and rather than take on that legal risk, previous ones, I'd just rather have that discussion. If you wish then to discuss it in public domain, that is fine. I don't mind. Can I have a mover and seconder that we move into confidential? Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Tolte. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is that against, Councillor? On all the items? You don't want to move into confidential? Okay. Well, you can still have that debate, but I'm just moving into confidential, not actually on that, but you want to vote against it, that's fine. Councillor Boglari, support
it's moving into confidential. Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Williams, those against, Councillor Golay, Councillor Bishop? Four. Okay, and Councillor Mitchell is absent. So thank you very much. We'll ask the members of the public in the gallery, please, to just let you turn on the microphone, find out where I am. Somewhere here, just go through the list. First item. Right. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson. Those against? Councillor Bishop. Item 19.2, fees register. Move Councillor Elliott, seconded Councillor Edwards. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Item 19.3, as amended. Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Elliott. Those in favour? Yeah. So those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte. Those against? Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop. Item 19.4, Capella Bar Town Centre Revitalisation Brief. Moved Councillor Gleeson, seconded Councillor Elliott. Those in favour? Those against? Motion is carried. Those in favour? Councillor Boglari, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, those against Councillor Bishop. Now, this is an item for noting. Williams, pardon me. Excuse me. It's an item for noting. See, I didn't have to bring it back, but he has, so you can have the transparency of what's happening in that space. Item 19.5, those in favour. Sorry, getting ahead of myself. Moved Councillor Mitchell, seconded Councillor Golay. Those in favour? Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Golay, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Tolte, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Bishop. Those against? Councillor Boglari. Are you having two votes on this one, Councillor? Those against was Councillor Boglari and Councillor Hewlett. Did I get that right? And I'm four. With that, councillors, that's what vote's been taken. Councillor, that means you can ask that question when we close the meeting, Councillor Hughes. Vote's been taken and the meeting is closed at 11:58. Thank you.